All right, you got an hour left in a Friday Hang Zone heading into a holiday weekend. Then the office closes in 4 minutes. So I don't know if that means we all just get to leave or...
No, that's weird.
Somebody's got to hold the line.
It's weird that on holidays, the rest of the office always gets a half day on the day before a holiday.
We'll stick around. And because we stuck around...
we work so hard.
That's right. We have an in-studio guest. He is here for the Big Three. Basketball, which will be in Dallas, actually in Frisco, for the next 6 weeks. It is the great Ice Cube. It's an honor.
Yay, yay. How y'all feeling?
Hello, fantastic. Mr. Cube.
Oh, man. Just call me Cube, man.
Okay.
Mr. Cube, I'm starting to look for a check.
That's my father. My dad's name is Mr. Cube.
My dad's name is Mr. Cube.
That's right.
So I'm going to be out there on Sunday. There are three games out at Comerica Center in Frisco this Sunday. What year is this?
This is our fifth year.
Fifth year.
Yeah, fifth season.
And so it'll be here, like I said, for the next 6 weeks. There are games Saturday, there are games Sunday, three games per day. I kind of want to go back to the start of the Big Three, though, and just the impetus behind you creating it, because we all know the guys, when they retire, they're capable of playing still at a high entertaining level. They're playing.
Yeah.
Around the country and, you know, in gyms, local gyms.
And around the world.
Some
guys, they lead the NBA and go play overseas. They don't just, you know, roll over and die. They still got a lot of basketball in them. And that's what we realize. They might not be able to play 82 games and back-to-backs and
48 minutes.
Yeah. Three games and four nights and all that kind of stuff. But half court, 3-on-3 to 50 once a week, them dudes is like, it's like they was when they was back in the NBA. As you start to mature, your basketball IQ goes up. And so these guys are very, very skilled. You know, it's not like watching new guys, you know, one and done guys come in and try to play. It's like watching experts at work. And so I think the league is perfectly calibrated for those athletes. And also we're younger, you know, we're not just former NBA players. We're, you know, 22 and up. So we got some guys in their prime playing too.
Was this your idea?
Yeah, me and the co-founder, a guy I've been working with for over 25 years named Jeff Quantnitz, we get into a lot of trouble together, you know what I mean, over the years. And so, you know, I always had in the back of my mind, I would see these amateur tournaments, Mountain Dew and Nike, they would do the, you know, Weekend Warrior 3-on-3 tournaments, you know, come on out with your squad. And I'm like, everybody plays 3-on-3. Why isn't it a pro league? Like, why isn't it professional? Why are they playing outside the arena instead of inside the arena? And so that's kind of that idea just stayed in the back of my mind for years. Never even thought about anything about that until I saw Kobe score 60 points in his last game. And I'm like, it's nowhere else you can see this dude play. I cannot pay money anywhere to see this guy play no more. That's a shame, because I know he still got it, or got, you know, enough for the Big Three.
Yeah.
And so we start to, you know, I was like, we putting this in motion. And that's when we really started to brainstorm for over a year, coming up with rules, coming up with the structure of the league, a lot of arguments on what it should be, because we had to make it more exciting than the FIBA version. FIBA has 3-on-3. They've been doing 3-on-3 for 50 years. But it looks amateur. You know, it looks like, you know, you're in the park with your friends outside. We wanted to elevate it and make it look more like an NBA game.
And put it on TV?
Yeah, definitely. CBS has been great to us. We started off with Fox, and then they kind of got out of the sports business on that level. At least basketball. They sold all their properties to Disney and sold their RSNs, regional sports networks. And they were really into football, baseball, forgot what else they into. So we moved on, and CBS has been great.
Outside of the entertainment industry, which I guess sports are entertainment, but when was the first time that you kind of had the entrepreneurial bent outside of art, outside of music, television, and film? Were there other things before the big three that you were into that were like heavily business related, like I said, outside of the art space?
Not really outside of the art space. Doing records, being an independent artist for most of my career. It just, you know, I felt like if you want to do something right, do it yourself. And so I've always had that kind of independent attitude towards the industry. Even though I've worked with big studios and big record companies sometime, but most of the time I'm usually creating, something off to the side that people, that they want to be a part of, and they come get me. And so that's always been my nature, you know, in hip hop, being from the West Coast, you know, all the big rappers, all the big time stars were East Coast rappers when I started. So we had that kind of independent attitude because Def Jam wasn't signing us, and you know, all the big major rap labels, they wasn't coming. So we had to kind of create our own. And so that's always been my mentality. Even with movies, you know, writing Friday and with sports too, you know.
On the independent level, and on Doing It Your Own Way, so America's Most Wanted comes out. It goes platinum with no radio play, I think, at that point, or very little, probably just local,
off the beaten
path type stations.
Yeah.
And as I was thinking about just your career, which I think is about as unique as it gets, I think that had to happen independently for it to ultimately have the long-term impact that it did. Like, I think if your album came out and it wasn't independent and they put their spin on it and their fingerprints on it, I don't think it would have had the long-lasting impact that it did for gangster rap. Like, I think it had to be you doing it your way and it worked. And then later people are like, all right, we kind of got dragged into this because his deal worked.
Yeah.
The bigger companies got dragged into it.
Yeah, but they wanted nothing to do with it at first. And if they had been involved at the first, I don't think it ever would have hit the same way.
Man, that's a great observation. I think you're right. You know, I always was like, I'm not going over to the mainstream. Mainstream is going to have to come over to me. That's how I was when I was young. And it started to happen. When we first came out, they had nothing. The mainstream really wanted to have nothing to do with N.W.A. or Ice Cube or anything like that. And I think about, you know, 93, 94, they just kind of like, can't beat them, got to join them. And so they just started to participate and want us to do things that they would have never asked us to do in 89, 90, and 91.
On that same front, and I think this relates to Boys in the Hood as well. If you can't tell, I'm white. I'm a Caucasian.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. So was it odd to you how quickly and how popular that sort of rap music, West Coast, gangster rap, and that sort of film, how quickly that became popular with people who had never stepped foot in an environment like that? Like, did that surprise you? At least
a little bit
in the beginning,
a little bit. But I think, you know, the Beastie Boys coming out, it really opened the door for other cultures to be a part of hip hop. So I had seen that phenomenon like roll through the hood. And so I wasn't that surprised. It was kind of like, okay, it's a matter of time. And I think people like reality and like things. They like to know about things that they hear about, but they don't really know. They kind of want to hear from the horse's mouth in a way. So I always felt like if we stay real and stay true to ourselves, you know, people want to check it out, whether they understand it or not. They're going to want to check it out because it's real.
So once the mainstream did come to you, Did you end up getting shafted by the music industry like so many people end up saying they got a bad contract or they didn't think they saw the royalty, you know?
The 360 deal?
No, I didn't get caught up in that. I had a early lesson with NWA, dealing with the manager there, a guy named Jerry Heller. That was my first and pretty much only bad experience with record companies and music business. Now, do they do everything you want them to do? No. So you do get in arguments about that. I did have to go into my record label with a bat one time, only because I was lied to. But for the most part,
that's the one where you smashed
the TV, right?
Yeah, I smashed a lot of stuff. mostly my gold and platinum records that was on the wall.
Okay, I like the imagery there.
So going
metaphor.
Okay, when you do that, did the end result like whatever your mindset was going in? I'm going to go smash everything up. I see. And I want what to happen out of that. I always wonder.
Well, I was
turn out the way you wanted it to.
I was lied to. Okay. I say lied to. I was trying to buy my first house. I had just sold a platinum record and a platinum EP for record company. So I needed an advance. You know, I needed about $100,000. To put down on my house, because I had the rest of the money, but I was $100,000 short.
And that does not sound like a large amount of money for.
No, I mean, it was money that was coming, you know, so I felt like, and you know, the guy was like, yeah, a guy named Brian Turner. He was like, yeah, sure, no problem, man. Cute. Get your house, do your thing. So I went through the process, you know, 90 days later, I'm in escrow. They're like, escrow's about to close, need this money in the bank. So I call and he didn't know what the hell I was talking about. I'm like, dude, you said go ahead and do it. You was going to give me the advance. Why can't I get the advance? I can't give you this money early. That's a problem, man. That's a problem.
So you saw a bat.
You told me. And I was just going up there to talk to him, but on my way up there, I used to keep a bat in my garage and I just grabbed it.
Just in case.
Just grabbed it, throw it in the trunk.
Maybe take some BP at the cages on the way back.
You know, walked in, you know, really with the plan. I walked in with the bat, but I really just had to plan it to kind of talk, you know. And just,
with a bat.
But just
with
in
the
case.
Bat. But he
side.
Didn't know. He didn't know I was coming. He didn't know why I had the bat. It wasn't like I was like, I'm on my way up there to, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. And then I just showed up. And you know, he just pissed me off, man, with his demeanor. Like, what you doing here, man? What, I told you I can't do it. I'm like.
So in the end result, though, did you get the money?
I got the money.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then the bat thing works.
The bat thing did work.
Kids out there.
His partner, a guy named Mark Cerami, you know, he ran in after we were gaffled up by the police and everything. He ran down and was like, hey, you know, can I just work it out with him? You know, Cube, just talk to me. And I told him what was happening. And he just was like, you should have came to me first. You know, we could have avoided all this. And so he made it happen. And, you know, me and Brian, we cool now. You know what I'm saying? It happened. It was young. I was young. I mean,
you got a new TV.
I would never go. Yeah, I would never take a bat to a meeting now.
That's one of those.
You gotta grow in life.
Lessons
you gotta grow.
Learned.
Yeah, I learned that. You know, I could have handled it a lot better.
You ever sit and think? Because just thinking about you coming up here, and I think Jake alluded to it already. It's like it's the most unlikely guy to be in a kids movie in history, right? Like. You have to think about yourself when you're that age and you're, you know, F the police is doing what it's doing.
Yeah.
And mainstream certainly didn't want to have much to do with you then. But then if you were to tell someone, what year was that? Like late 80s?
When I did Are We There Yet? Or
No. F the police.
Yeah, that was 89. 89.
At that point, just go grab any random adult and say, see this guy?
20 years from now.
He's going to be, yeah, he's going to be entertaining you and your kids and, or your grandkids, I guess.
Isn't America great?
It's amazing. It's incredible. Really?
Yeah, man. I think the reason I did the movie, I don't know why they asked me to do the movie. Well, I do. Adam Sandler was supposed to do Are We There Yet? It was his movie. He had it set up, but he couldn't do it for, you know, he was probably doing other movies at the time. So the script kind of landed in my hands, and I had done the Friday movies, R-rated comedy, did well. Then I did Barbershop, which was a PG-13 comedy. So I'm like, hey, let's see if we can go down to PG. You know what I mean? Let's see if we can get
a broader
fish, fish where the fish are.
Yeah, a broader audience. So I felt like it was a time where my fans were having kids.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy when you got a 7-year-old walking up to you and say, man, I love Friday, man. Where's Smokey? And I'm like, what is your little ass doing watching Friday? I need to do a movie for you. You know, I need to do a movie for my fans' kids. Because if I don't, what's going to happen is these kids are going to grow up and their parents are going to be like, that's Ice Cube. He used to be so cool. Remember, he did this and he did that. And I didn't want to be that guy. I didn't want to be the guy that the parents had to show the kids and teach the kids who he is. I wanted the kids to know. I wanted the kids to be like, that's Nick from Are We There Yet? And
amazing.
And so I started, you know, getting that and received a lot of love from a lot of youngsters. And it's cool because you have fans, you know, I have fans now that 8 to 80 for real. No doubt.
From the music industry down to PG to creating a sports league, the Big Three, which is here for the next 6 weeks. Can you hang out for another segment?
Yeah, yeah, I'm here.
All right, Ice Cube, more next.
The Tick. I saw it coming, that's why I went solo. And kept on stomping. Well, y'all moved straight out of Compton. Living with the whites, one big house.
All right, Ice Cube, Mr. Cube. Ice.
Yeah.
Cube.
Cube, just
studio.
Call me Cube.
And he's in studio, one, just because he always wanted to meet us and you know, be on
always,
Dallas radio.
Man. Couldn't wait to get to the Tick.
And then it just so happened also that your Big Three Basketball League is in town. It's in Frisco this weekend. Did you give a website for tickets or something, Jake?
Big3.com/tickets. Got games for the next 6 weeks. Got games Saturday and Sunday. I'm going out there Sunday.
Feels easy to remember. Yeah.
Come on through, man. At least get some air conditioning. Like, it's going to be so hot. Come through. The kids bugging you. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Come down, see the Big Three.
You're probably off on Monday. You know? Man. Just come out. Make a weekend out of it.
I'm telling you, you won't have more fun in the city than at the Big Three game.
But air conditioning is a nice copy.
Air conditioning, we guarantee that for sure.
You are a couple other things we wanted to mention. I know it's a big deal for you that what's your involvement with the NFL trying to help out with black-owned businesses? What is that about?
Well, you know, we went to the NFL and we said, hey, you guys spend a lot of money in your business, up and down, you know, different categories, from IT to production managers to construction to concessions, custodian work, party planning. You guys have, you know, a million different opportunities. Inject a couple of black businesses in there. When you planning your parties and you doing your looking for an IT company or you're looking for, you know, media and, you know, I don't know, everything you got, inject a couple of black companies in there. And they said, yeah. And started doing it. And what's cool is it doesn't cost them an extra dime. You know, it's money they wasn't going to already spend. And, you know, Roger Goodell and Troy Vincent been great on trying to make it happen. And we want the teams to jump in too. You know what I mean? Jerry, if you're listening, we love you to do that with the Cowboys. The NFL's doing it. We want to do it with the NBA. We want to do it with Major League Baseball. We want to do it with Major League Soccer. Nike.
Did you approach Goodell?
Yeah.
Or did they approach you?
Well, Troy Vincent contacted us.
Okay.
And said, do you guys have a plan or a program or idea on how we could do something cool for the community? And this was our idea. We had a plan to go to a lot of major companies with this idea, but having the NFL come to us, we felt like this is a great start because the NFL has a lot of influence in the country. We're going to go to a lot of Fortune 500 companies with this same plan and say, hey, we'll find the companies. We'll find the companies for you that can do the job and plug them in. And we'll cultivate the relationship. And, you know, the NFL has started. We've been doing this for a year. So we wanted to have some wins on the board, some touchdowns before we announced this. And so, you know, they've already allocated $125 million.
Damn. All right.
To black businesses so far. Just doing more.
Well, that sounds like enough. I'm sure you don't need more from Jerry.
Come on now. We need a little more.
I was wondering how many years, and I'm wondering, cynically, thinking about the NFL actually wanting to help someone.
I mean, they've already spent the money, so it's not like they want to do it. They're doing it.
Do they do this? Do they partner with you without Kaepernick? If Kaepernick never did what he did?
I don't know. You know, I think it has more to do with probably 2020 and the George Floyd stuff that was in the air. A lot of companies want to do something to try to help. We think the wealth gap is a major problem. It's a major issue.
Well, that's getting a lot better.
Yeah.
Actually, no.
yeah, it's going the other way. And we think if we start to, you know, go to the private sector with this great idea that we can, you know, start to chip away at the wealth gap a little bit and hopefully, you know, start to turn this thing around.
It feels like the George Floyd thing only happened, you know, because someone videoed it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Rodney King stuff only happened because somebody videoed him.
Yeah.
Like you even, you know, F the police. That's at first received very poorly, at least from mainstream, and then thought of as, I mean, you're highlighting a problem that's actually happening that, you know, I don't know about where I live.
Mm-hmm.
As a kid at that time.
True.
So, I mean, it seems sometimes like things are getting worse, but are they getting worse or are they getting better? But we're just hearing about more things because things were really bad, I'm sure, like you said, when you were growing up.
Yeah, I mean, things are bad. I don't know if things are getting worse. They're already probably as bad as they can be. It's really about what are we going to do to turn it around?
And do you have those answers? Because I think lots of people would like the answer.
Well, I mean, I don't have all the answers. You know, I probably have more questions than answers. But at the end of the day, I think you got to do something. I think, you know, capital helps a little. It's a start. I think a lot of our problems in the community comes from, you know, our access to capital and the things that we can do. You know, you got crabs in a bucket. You got to get rid of the bucket.
Dan and I talk about this all the time on different issues, which is that it's not the way I would prefer it to happen, but sometimes businesses can help progress in a number of different situations because they see it as making them look better. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like, I don't care. Yeah. I don't care if they do it just to make them look better. If it ultimately if it helps the problem, then, you know, they get a little PR win of we're helping this or we're helping that. But if it helps, it helps. I don't really care how we get there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really the NFL's job to solve everybody's problem. You know, they're an entertainment company. You know, they put on football games and people watch, and they could leave it at that. Tell everybody, shut up. This is what we do.
They'd still make the same money.
Yep. Yeah. But, you know, they're giving that extra effort to try to help where they can. And I think they should be commended for that. You know, having a PR little blip is one thing, but actually spending the money, you got to give it up to that. You know, sure. It's not just a PR move. It's an actual real move that's really going to help people. And, man, they get salute from me for that, for sure.
Back to your career real quick. So with really no background in acting or in script writing, you know, I know you wrote the script for Friday,
mm-hmm.
kind of just by seeing how it was done from Boys in the Hood, right?
Maybe
get a treatment for that. Which one of them, now that you've done both, was more of a headache to get to the point you wanted to get to, like to your vision, an album or a movie?
Movie.
That's what we always hear.
A movie without a doubt. You know, putting in perspective, like, I could go do a record by myself. Like, me, engineer, producer, that's all we need, you know. With a movie, you need over 100 people to really pull it off. And so to coordinate that and to get everybody doing what they're supposed to do, when they're supposed to do it in a timely manner, not wasting money, it's, you know, it's a task to bring all that together. And then make a, you know, finish the movie and then, you know, make a movie that people like.
Promoted.
Yeah.
And all that.
You know, it's a monumental task. And it's like that every time. It's not like the more you do it, the easier it's going to be. No, it's like you start from the bottom of the mountain and we climb Mount Everest again. You know, we do it every time.
That sounds like a pain.
I mean,
it's like a massive pain.
You know, it's like you're getting paid a nice amount of money to make believe. So you start to feel like, okay, we're having fun, aren't we? We should be.
I got a little piece of audio I wanted to play you. See if you remember this. Do you know what year this is from? The
Ribs?
Terrible thing? So you were in Dallas.
The press junket. So I don't know what movie it was
related to. Some kind of a media tour.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's probably 15 years ago.
At least. And we had a guy on our show back then who would go out and do bits or interview people. And I just want to see if you remembered this, okay?
Okay.
Here we go.
What I found was interesting is, kind of follow up what she's saying, is the departure between how funny you were in this movie
yeah.
and some of the serious stuff you've done in the past.
Yeah.
Tell me about working in such a serious genre like Law & Order SVU and working with a guy like Richard Belzer, who's funny, a comedian.
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, you got the wrong guy.
Did you get some...
Wait.
Did you get some
Hold on.
Richard Belzer?
Who?
Yeah, he's a comedian.
And what movie?
That's Ice-T.
What?
you got the wrong cat, man.
That's Ice-T.
You put the Ice-T in the tea.
Nah, that's Ice-T. That's my man. Don't worry about it, man. You know.
Did he give you any tips?
Nah, he didn't give me
Oh, I'm sorry. All right, don't worry about it.
And who is this dude? Come finish, man.
You were very nice about it.
Do you remember that?
I don't remember that, but it happens often. So, you know,
he was obviously doing a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that now or knew it then. Like he didn't really think you were Ice-T.
Well, I don't know if I knew that then.
Okay,
but it's been done a few different times and a few different ways. So people come with that bit, you know.
But people have done it not on purpose, though.
No, some people have done it on purpose. One guy tried to get me last week with that.
Oh, he did?
With the whole
Okay, so it's an old
Ice-T reference. Yeah.
um
And you're cool with it.
See? I'm cool. I mean, because Ice-T's my homeboy. Now, if he wasn't my homeboy, I'd probably be irritated.
What's, are you into modern rap at all? What do you think of Kanye?
I love Kanye. I think Kanye is a genius when it comes to music, producing, getting everybody's attention. I think
he does that.
He's what you want in an entertainer. You don't want no boring entertainer who's just, you know, don't give you nothing but a song. You know what I mean? You want dudes like to get your attention, and that's what he does.
Your opinion of the KD Kyrie situation?
Well, I mean, Kyrie is one of my favorite players. I think if they both end up with the Lakers, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's heaven on earth.
It feels like the Lakers are the only place Kyrie is going to end up, right?
I hope so.
Because they seem to have also a guy they'd love to just get rid of, and those contracts kind of match.
Yeah. You know, I think, come on with it. You know, if nobody else wants him, we do.
Like, do you like the way the NBA is now? As far as, obviously, LeBron started it with the decision, right? Player empowerment.
Yeah.
Like, it was so funny, because I think we were arguing against it at the time, Jake, where, even though I do consider myself pretty old, the old people are like, like,
that's disloyal.
You can't create your own team. Like it's okay if a GM,
yeah,
if Jerry Krause or whoever decide, or if I acquire Kareem and Magic and James Worthy, like, that's okay.
But if they choose.
But if those guys chose to play together there, that's bad.
I mean, I loved it.
You loved that back then? And
I love both, you know.
You love it now.
It's like with the league I got, with the Big Three, the players are the GM. Like, the player captains pick who they want to play with. It's no
GM. Kyrie will fit right in there.
Yeah, it's no GM sitting on the side, you know, telling you, you should play with this guy, you should play with that guy. So I think players know to some degree who they can win with. And so I think it's cool.
Did you have to have a long conversation with your son? Like, even maybe give a blessing about him playing you?
Actually, it was a short conversation. And that scared me, because I was like, hey, man, let me talk to you. He was like, okay, what's up? I said, it looks like we're going to make this NWA movie. He's like, oh, cool. I said, I want you to play me. He said, okay. I was like, oh, come on, man.
You're all ready.
Okay. You sure? I mean, you want to do this? He's like, yeah, I'll do it. I'm like, oh. Man, that don't, you know, I wanted him to be like, man, okay. All right, yeah. You know, I wanted him to have a.
Like, that'd be such a huge thing.
Yeah,
to take.
He was like.
Yeah, it'll be nothing.
And I'm like, oh, man, he don't want to do it. I'm like, he don't want to do it. Because I know all the work it takes. So.
A lot of pressure, too.
I said, you know what? I'm going to see if you really want it. I said, man, I got an acting coach for you. He's like, okay. I said, it's in New York. New York? I got to go out there? I said, yeah, man, New York. He said, all right, when do I leave? So I was like, oh, okay. Because I thought he was going to be like, man, why we can't find nobody around here? Why I got to go to New York? You know, blah, blah, blah. And he went to New York. He loved it. He loved the process. So I said, okay, I got a guy in L.A. I want you to work with, too. I just was trying to put him through the ringer. Because if he was going to quit, I wanted him to quit on me and not quit on the movie, or, you know, just kind of take it light. And so he was working with this dude, man, and I was calling him one day. I'm like, where are you going? He's like, man, I'm got to go work with the coach. And I'm like, oh, he's feeling it. You know, he's getting a vibe. He understands the work. So from then I had to convince Gary Gray, who directed it. Now, Gary Gray, I've been knowing him for years. I actually got him in the business. He directed my It Was a Good Day video. He's the director of Friday. And so I said, Gary, we're making a movie. I'm going to tell you something. I want my son to play me. And Gary was like, man, what? Man, I thought we was making a real movie. What is this? Come on, Q. man, he don't even act. I said, listen, man, you gonna work with him and you gonna make him look good just like John Singleton did with me. Like, I wasn't no actor when I did Boys in the Hood. John worked with me and it came out right. So you gonna do the same thing. And so he kind of was like, you know. And so then I had to convince Universal, Donna Langley at Universal. She was like, okay, kid, but we need a screen test though. So when my son gets to the screen test, there's five other Ice Cubes there. Oh. And that pissed him off. He was like, what? He's like, all these dudes, nah. He said, I got to get this. So he ended up doing great. Make a long story short, he did great in the screen test. Universal signed off on him. So after Universal signed off on him, that's when Gary Gray was like, yeah, he was the best out of all the guys we saw. And so that's what got him kind of rolling in the movie, in the role. He had to work harder than all the other actors to get the part.
Because he had it up. Yeah, he was up against it. That vision of this is just nepotism. I can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we had to dismantle that vision. And you know, the coach's kid always got the worst. You know.
And now he's in Star Wars stuff.
Man, he's doing bigger movies than me now. He's like Star Wars. He did Godzilla.
How much do you know about Cocaine Bear? You know the story?
Yeah, he was telling me about that movie. It sounds insane.
It's insane.
A movie called Cocaine Bear.
Yeah.
Just sounds insane.
And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a bear who finds a bunch of cocaine, and it's a true story.
Starts to kill people.
It's a real story.
So
several years ago.
But all right. Very proud of him.
Well, we're getting the rap sign, not the R.A.P., it's a WRAP. Because I don't know what I'd do if I got the RAP.
I mean, you
sign.
Just got to.
Would go I just start rapping?
Start. Yeah, man, you got to bust one.
Yeah, he should.
It's called a Hot 16. You got to give me one.
Okay. That's our guy for that. Blake over there. He'll.
Yeah.
All right.
Give us some Eminem.
I think
no,
he's got to go.
No, I don't want to hear nobody else rap.
Gotta,
no, gotta have that original.
Next
gotta
time.
Some original.
All right. We want to ask you for one more thing.
Yes.
It is our radio liner. So we would like you to identify yourself. You know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then say, I never listened to Dan and Jake on the Ticket.
Yo, what's up? This your homeboy Ice Cube. And I never listened to Dan and Jake on the Ticket. Never.
Nailed it. Big3.com/tickets. Thank you so much, man. You're very kind with your time.
Come on out, man. Comerica Center tomorrow, Sunday. Man, we're going to have fun.
I'll be there.
Zero performing. It's going down. It ain't going up. Yeah, yeah.
Zero performing.
Yeah.
They didn't give me that in the copy. They should have led with that. All right, 240. This is the Ticket.
Today.